Welcome back to the Daily Drum on WHUR, Sirius XM, Channel 141, 96.3 HD2 and 98.3 FM. This is the Insight segment. I'm Harold Fisher. Since the end of the 2020 presidential election, voting rights has been in the headlines weekly, sometimes daily. And this week is no exception, with the For the People Act not even getting past a procedural vote in the Senate. Well, this weekend, the cross-country Black Voters Matter tour will end in Washington, D.C. with a message about and for Black voters. But what is the message? And will this and other movements move the needle when it comes to fair voting practices? Well, joining me to talk about this are Harvard University political science professor Dr. Niambi Carter and Wanda Mosley, National Field Director for Black Voters Matter. Lines are open. We are talking about this issue tonight. Give me a call at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. You can tweet me at HFisher, WHUR, or find me on Instagram at Harold T. Fisher. Wanda, thanks for joining the program.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm super excited.
Thank you so much. Good to have you on. And Dr. Carter, always a pleasure to have you on the program.
Thank you, Harold.
Let me first start with where you are right now in this tour, and what are you going to do when you get to D.C. this weekend, Wanda?
So right now, at this very moment, we are closing out a fantastic event at the state capitol in Charleston, West Virginia. We had a great turnout today. We had some wonderful performances. We had some food. It was a great day. We came here to squad up with folks, West Virginians, Black West Virginians. We thought it was really important that, you know, folks hear from the people of West Virginia, since their senator, I don't know, some kind of way, I feel some kind of way about him thinking that he is now in control of the United States Senate. When last time I checked, it was the people of Georgia who decided who had control in the Senate. So it was really important for us to be here in West Virginia today. We are going to make a stop in Richmond tomorrow, Richmond, Virginia. And then we are coming to D.C., where we are going to turn up. We have a powerhouse lineup of speakers. We've got food and music because, you know, when we do events at Black Voters Matter, we like to lean into the culture. So you ain't going to ever come to a Black Voters Matter event without having some food, some music, some singing, all that good stuff. And we got some giveaways for folks. And, you know, we just want people to come out, have a good time, learn about this legislation. And most importantly, rally for D.C. statehood. We are coming from all over the country to say we stand with y'all. And we are sick and tired of y'all being in a position where you have representation, taxation without representation. So we're here to stand with y'all in D.C. and say it's time. It's been time. It's overdue. Let's get it done, D.C. statehood.
Sounds good. Always good for entertainment and food to get you into the church to hear the sermon. But what is the broader sermon? Because D.C. voters, yes, we do care about D.C. statehood. I don't live in D.C. anymore, but I'm from D.C., and I care about D.C. statehood. But that is not the only Black voter issue. What is the broader message? What is the sermon for your organization?
Woo, the sermon for the organization. I'm going to speak to you from the Book of Georgia today and telling Black folks everywhere, we got power. Y'all saw what we did in Georgia, right? You saw what we did not once, but twice. You saw what we did in the midst of a pandemic. You saw what we did. We shocked the world. We did the impossible, the unthinkable, and then we turned around and did it again. So the sermon, the message is we got power. We want Black folks to know everywhere that we got power. When we come together, when we work in coalition, when we flex our collective muscle, we will make things happen. So that is the message for Black voters.
Dr. Carter, is there, however, a concern with how the rules begin to change, as we have seen, not just after the presidential election, not just after what we've seen in Georgia, but it just seems that so many of the rules are beginning to change as it relates to voting for Black and brown voters across this country. And as I said in the beginning of the program, the For the People Act could not even get past a procedural vote. And if those people who were responsible for it not getting past that procedural vote are not voted out of office, it looks like these things are baked in, or am I being too pessimistic?
No, I think you're exactly right. But this is why folks like Black Voters Matter and the work that Wanda and the organization are doing are so important. I want to thank her and the organization for the work they're doing. It's not all for nothing. I mean, there are things that can be done, but they're going to probably take longer, and they're going to probably have to happen at the state level. We've had this issue with lack of federal oversight and intervention in these kinds of elections things since Shelby County v. Holder in 2013, where the Supreme Court essentially said that the formula for preclearance, right, which means that states have to ask before they make these kinds of changes to their election laws, they had to ask the Department of Justice. Well, essentially, that has no force, which is why you see these states running amok, and all of them seem to be racing, you know, to put these new bills forward with lightning speed over the last, you know, 10 years or so. So the rules have only changed because we have not done anything as a nation, as a Congress, really, to enforce federal voting rights. Now, there's nothing that's keeping the government from Congress from doing this, excuse me, except for the fact that you have an obstructionist party that has used its might any way that it can to prevent any kind of action on voting rights and federal oversight, because we know that federal law is the supreme law. So these state legislative measures would be moot if these federal laws were enacted. But they don't want it enacted, because what they're trying to do is play a long game. And the game that they're playing is hoping they can do enough to hobble Black voters and Latino voters and Native voters and others so that they can continue to stay in power and put forward legislation that, quite frankly, most Americans don't want. But they don't have to win America. They just need to win their states. And that's the game the Republicans are playing right now, which is why it's so important to be in the street, because we're simply just going to have to overwhelm them at the ballot box.
As it relates, you know, as it relates, Wanda, to the For the People Act, earlier this week, Minority Leader Mitch McConnell talked about the preservation of states' rights. Was that a dog whistle, bullhorn, foghorn? It sounded like that to me. What did you hear?
You know, politicians are always going to do what politicians do, walk a fine line, stay in the middle, skate on thin ice, and activists are always going to do what we do, shout real loud from the rooftop, from the highest hill or mountain, and say, nah, that ain't right. Look, It's like the doctor said, we have power, more power in some places at the local level, but we got to build that muscle at the state level. And until we get there, we will continue to do what we did in Georgia. Like the sister said, just overwhelm the system, get our folks out to the polls by any means necessary. You know, voter suppression isn't new in Georgia. We've been dealing with it for quite some time. We know that there was an election stolen from us in 2018, and the response from voters in Georgia in 2020 was to come out and work even harder, grind harder, go deeper into rural areas, organize harder, work like we've never worked before. All this during a pandemic, and we were able to get it done.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We are talking about the Black vote and the Black Voters Matter cross-country tour ending in D.C. This weekend. If you have a comment, if you have a question, give me a call at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Jewel, calling from Maryland. Thanks for calling, Jewel. What's on your mind?
Yeah, I'm a nonprofit organization, My Ancestry Land. We just come try to support our community, any minority community, to bring education for them for free. We don't have to go hungry, because every time we come back tomorrow, we get hungry. We can't get the food. But if we bring the food to you, it's to help you to have education, to have the CNA classes. Right now, we have a CNA program for free for minority community. We will pay for, and then they can get back to work. When we get back to work, we don't have to go hungry anymore. And We already launched in Frederick, Maryland.
Okay, Jewel, let me stop you because I'm not sure I'm 100% clear. Are you talking about voter education?
Yeah, we have to talk about a voter, but every time people come to us to say vote for us, we will support you. When they get there, they don't support us anymore. Now, we don't want to wait for them anymore. We have to ask them to join this organization to get the classes for free. Education for free.
Jewel, let me stop you there and see what Dr. Carter has to say about that. Thank you so much for your phone call, because I think, you know, he makes an interesting point, Dr. Carter, in that, and this is something we've been talking about for a really, really long time, and this is down into the weeds of how you pick people who represent your views, and then once they get in office, they seem to kind of turn around. There may not be a guarantee that the person that you vote for is going to continue to do what you hope they do. So how do you keep their feet to the fire?
Well, I mean, I think one of the things we always have to do is be paying attention. And I think to his point about education, one of the things that this country is sorely lacking is civic education. There are lots of things that we as citizens do not know about how our system works, which is how or why we see so many people being frustrated and maybe sometimes opting out, because it's just like, this is unfair, it doesn't feel right, and I don't know how to really engage. But I also think this, you got to keep your eye on your legislator. They are there to serve you. And if you don't feel like you're being served, I tell people a lot of things. You can vote them out, you can vote for a competitor, or you can run yourself. And I think it's important that we always remind ourselves that we can also be the change we want to see in our communities. We see the sister in Buffalo that just became a mayor. This woman was a teen mom. This woman is a socialist. All the things that people say that make it impossible for you to succeed, and look at her today. And I think we look at people like Cori Bush, another example of someone who lost before but came back. And I think we have to always think of ourselves as those representatives for our communities. Maybe we fail, but we lose 100% of the time when we never try. The other thing I would also say is, you know, when we're doing, when we're talking about these things like voting rights, we cannot, I guess, believe that all citizens want the same thing. These Republicans in particular that lined up against the For the People Act did so in lockstep with their party. I don't care if they say they're moderate. I don't care if they say they're far right. They all agreed that expanding voting rights is not in their interest. And we have to keep that in mind, because they are representing a significant portion of this electorate that does not want to see black and brown and indigenous people at the polls, and don't think that these people are real citizens whose interests ought to be represented. So we can't assume that these people's actions are being poo-pooed everywhere. Yeah.
I need to take a break, but I do want to let you finish your thought. And I have a comment also about that Buffalo situation. Stay with us. The Daily Drum will continue on SiriusXM 96.3 HD2 and 98.3 FM. Angela Stribling in for John Mons with The Quiet Storm. I'm Harold Fisher. We'll be back in a few seconds. Welcome back to The Daily Drum on SiriusXM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. We continue our discussion about Black Voters Matter, the issues and the movement. My guests are Wanda Mosley, National Field Director for Black Voters Matter, and Howard University Political Science Professor Dr. Niambi Carter. Lines are open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. 10. Certainly, you're welcome to tweet me at HFisherWHUR or find me on Instagram at Harold T. Fisher. To that point, Dr. Carter, you're talking about India Walton, who won. She will be. Buffalo is a Democratic city. I live there. I know it. She will be the first Black woman mayor of Buffalo. Byron Brown, who was a council member when I lived in Buffalo, he was the first Black person to be mayor of Buffalo. And so it just goes to show, I think, to a point that I think Wanda may agree with, that even as we do see a shift to people of color in leadership positions, sometimes even within that construct, there is a change, Wanda.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, look, we are finding ourselves in a time and a place where, you know, like Dr. Brown mentioned earlier, a lot of folks don't understand or know civics. We know that it's not being taught in schools. And so a lot of that responsibility, unfortunately, has fallen onto nonprofit organizations. So now, in addition to getting people registered to vote, getting them out to the polls, protecting their right to vote, you know, we're also saddled with the responsibility of helping them understand the process. And it's complicated. It's difficult sometimes to navigate. You know, we saw a lot of folks out taking to the streets last summer, rightfully so, demanding change, demanding justice. Defund the police was a popular sentiment that a lot of people believed in. But did we see those people vote in those local elections for their city council, who are the ones who control their budget, who are the ones who can shift funding from police over to community-based programs, mental health programs? Were they at the polls like they were out in the streets? And the answer is no. And so I don't want to blame people. I don't want to blame activists for that. I don't want to blame the public for that. But that's a real problem that we're dealing with, especially in the Black community. And so, you know, like Dr. Brown said earlier, people check out because this is not working for them. But, you know, again, I go back to the Book of Georgia. I got to remind folks, we got power. Look at what we did in Georgia last year. If Georgia can do it, anybody can do it.
I do want to talk more specifically about your organization. We know where it's going to end this weekend, but how did this cross-country tour begin? Where did it begin, and what prompted this tour, this movement specifically?
Woo! What prompted this movement? Two words, Joe Manchin. I mean, look, I don't know when it happened, but at some point, one day I woke up, and Joe Manchin was in charge of the Senate, right? Even though Georgia voters, you know, made history and delivered the Senate, he was in charge. And so that was really an op-ed that he wrote. Gosh, we were in Texas. It was around the time of municipal elections. He wrote that op-ed, and that was kind of, you know, the last straw for us. We were like, you know what? We got to gas up the bus. We roll in the blackest bus in America. We're going to need to go on up to D.C., tell the Senate, we delivered power. Now you owe us. There is a promissory note due to the voters of Georgia. We need the protection of the federal government for our voting rights because they are under attack. And so our co-founder and our executive director, Cliff Albright, said, you know what? This is the 60th anniversary of the Freedom Rides. Let's do the reverse Freedom Rides. Let's go from the South back up to the North. We started in New Orleans. We did a kickoff event there. We had some of the original Freedom Riders with us in New Orleans, in Jackson, Mississippi, in Birmingham, Alabama, and Nashville, Tennessee. And I have to just pause and say, you know, two of the sisters that were in Nashville, when I tell you their stories were just beyond moving to me, they touched my very soul. They showed us the battle scar, the wounds that they carry on their bodies proudly from when they were doing the sit-ins at the lunch counter, and the white supremacists, the racist white people who were there, you know, chastising them and taunting them and you know, hitting them and doing all these things to them, would extinguish their cigarettes on their arms. These two of these women had these scars still on their bodies as a reminder for the sacrifice and the work that they did. So we are so honored and so blessed to be following in their footsteps. And so before anybody, before Dr. Brown or anybody else gets on me, no, Charleston, West Virginia was not on the original Freedom Ride route, right? But I already said why we had to pivot and come here. Two words, Joe Manchin. And then next in Virginia, a stop in Richmond, which was once, you know, the capital of the Confederates. So that's quite poignant that the blackest bus in America will pull up there. And then on to D.C. So this, again, is necessary because we are coming. We are not asking. We are not requesting. We are demanding protection from the federal government to protect voting rights across the over 40 states that have seen these GOP-led legislatures draft and sign into law these egregious, these very racist voter suppression bills. We are living in an era that we call Jim Crow 2.0, and it is high time that we squad up with some folks from all over the country. We got buses coming from California and Arizona, two words, Kristen Sinema, two more words, who are coming to the Capitol to say, nah, we need the protection. This is not right. This is not what people want. This is predicated on the big lie, which poll after poll shows nobody believes, which audit and recount after audit and recount and lawsuit
has shown not one credible case of voter fraud.
Let me go back to the phone lines, 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Brandon, calling from D.C. Thanks for calling, Brandon. What's on your mind?
Yes. I'm very uplifted about with the way this sister just talked, Harold. You know, I mean, but the narrative, I mean, changes so much, you know, from us. You know what I'm saying? We speak about, you know, the Freedom Riders and all that. You know, we talk about Dr. Martin Luther King. We talk about some of our great leaders, right? But where did they not do that started us from where they left off? That's just one little basic little question on that. But we go back to the Constitution, the Dred Scott decision. We keep on overlooking this decision, the Supreme Court, Robert B. Tanner. And we, go back in history about that decision and say a black man would have no respect that a white man would ever honor in America. And it's still on the books, right? And we keep on calling, and I've got this milk thing called black. I'm very, very, not sure on that word again. Because, I mean, as long as we keep on calling us that, and I don't...
Calling us what?
Black.
Brandon, let's not get into those semantics, because you want to call yourself African American, you want to call yourself black, you want to call yourself people of color. The bottom line is, we are talking about the vote that impacts all of the people within that semantical discussion. So I'm going to let you go there, but I do want to bring Dr. Carter back in, and thank you, Brandon. Dr. Carter, to the point that he was saying, history is one thing, having some of the original Freedom Riders there to inspire us and to give us an opportunity to remember how far we've come. But what is the spark now that will do in other states, like Texas, for example, what we saw in Georgia? Because the goalpost has already been moved in Texas. And it again, it seems like whatever was baked in is now burned in. So what is needed? What needs to happen in a place like Texas and some of the other states that have implemented these new rules, laws regarding voter suppression?
Well, I mean, look, I think the thing that we have to remember, the only reason these laws exist is because people recognize that people have power, right, and they are changing the electorate in some very important ways. Texas, for example, most of the new citizens of Texas are non-white people, which is why you have Texas working so hard to gerrymander those people in places to minimize their power and working hard to end, you know, to shorten the window for early voting and all those kinds of things. And look, none of this stuff happens overnight. Like your caller said, he talked about Dred Scott, which was 1857. Enslavement ends in 1865, technically, and then you have another 100 years of Jim Crow before you get a Voting Rights Act in 1965. That was a century of struggle. So what people need to remember, none of these things happen overnight. And what Wanda has talked about repeatedly is that you can't give up because things don't go right one time. You stay at it, and you stay at these people's necks. Because we saw in Florida, for example, when Andrew Gillum ran a few years ago, nobody expected him to do as well as he did in a state like Florida. But it looks like Florida could be in play. Florida could be another Georgia in a few years. You look at a place like Louisiana and Mississippi, where you have large swaths of black voters who have just not been mobilized. And I'll use Jesse Jackson's language, right? There are rocks laying around, right, ready to be put in David's slingshot, but they're not being utilized yet, and it's because nobody has mobilized them to the same extent. But those things, I think, take time, and I think everybody wants a single election to go the way they want to prove that these things happen, but change doesn't happen that way. Change is a long-term commitment. It's a process. It takes time, and it's hard, and it's not pretty. It is every day. It's sitting in a bus going from Richmond and to West Virginia, to D.C., and all of these places. It's the work. And I think many times we get sold a narrative that 1965 happens, the March on Washington happens, and all the things start falling out of the sky like manna. And we know that's not true, right? There were lots of actions that happened at the local level, that happened at the state level, that it made something like a March on Washington possible. But it took a century. And I want us all to keep our eyes on that, right, and recognize that it is a time-intensive process. So things don't change in a singular election cycle. It doesn't mean that they won't ever change. It's sometimes the incremental steps moving closer and closer to that goal. And litigation is going to be key in these states because we can't count on this Senate to do anything to advance voting rights. So we know that a lot of what's going to happen is going to have to be what we saw in a place like Georgia, what we saw in Arizona, right? Nobody expected Arizona to flip Democrat. But look what happened in Arizona. So it can happen. It can happen.
Wanda, let's go back to our church metaphor, because that's where we are. So when you go to these cities, I'm interested in hearing about the reception beyond the preaching to the choir, because we already know that there are so many quote unquote choir members who are already in the church when Pastor Wanda and the rest of the pastors from this movement come to put down the sermon. But how do you get some of the other, dare I say it, voting heathens into the church to hear that service?
So the way that we make that happen is, first and foremost, the first rule that every good organizer knows is we have to listen. All too often, voter registration folks, voting rights experts, activists go into communities and start talking at Black folks, start telling Black folks what they need, what they should be doing, what they want, what's wrong in their community. And that immediately shuts people down. The other thing that folks do, the other big sin, the other big mistake, is shaming, trying to shame people into registering and voting.
What do you mean by that? What do you mean by that?
Someone died for you to have the right to vote. Now, look, that is true. And that is good enough for me, for you, for Dr. Carter. I think I called you Dr. Brown earlier. My apologies.
Oh, that's fine.
That's good enough. That's good enough for the three of us, right? But, y'all, that's not working for everybody else. That's not working for this generation, this millennial generation. If you think about how many people watched George Floyd die, think about that. They are almost numb to Black death, and that is sad, and that is frustrating. And then when they think about the civil rights movement, there's a huge disconnect. They think that's something that happened a long, 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 long time ago. But it wasn't that long ago. But there's no connection for them. And so when we come into the communities making those mistakes, exercising those cardinal sins, we have lost them. But when we come into these communities and we listen, okay, we have their attention, and then when we hear them say what it is that is worries them, that bothers them, that they want to change, we must immediately affirm and acknowledge whatever it is that they say. We may want to come in there talking about city council budgets and police brutality, but if they talk about potholes, well, you better affirm and say, you're right, these potholes are awful. Now, what else? Let's talk about something else before you start talking at them and telling them what to do. That's not working. That's what we've been doing, and that's not working.
What are they saying? I love the pothole example because I got my share of pothole stories. Lord knows with my commute. But what are they saying in real time when you've gone to these cities? What have you heard, the whispers and the shouts from the people who want to be heard? What are they talking about?
So I'll give you two issues that are of extreme importance in the city of Albany, Georgia, down in Daugherty County, Southwest Georgia. They are worried about extremely high utility bills and access to healthy food. There are no grocery stores in the Black community, and these light bills, these utility bills that they pay are astronomical, and they are insane. you would be, your eyes would pop out of your head if you've seen these bills that I've seen, $1,100, $1,200. They're like, yeah, my bill is $1,100. I mean, normally it's only $700 a month. I'm like, y'all, that ain't good either. That ain't right. That is not normal. So what we found when we went into the community and we started listening and hearing, their light bills, their utility bills are a product of bad policy and climate change. So let's talk about climate change. When white folks come into the community talking about climate change, they come in talking about saving planet Earth. Black folks are like, can I save my household? Can I make sure that we can be healthy and happy here in this house before I go saving the whole world and the planet? But if you come in and you explain how climate change is creating these storms, and when these storms come through, they flood your city, they take your power grids offline, and when your power grids come back online, it creates this surge that makes your bills higher. Then can we talk about the policies that are enacted by your utility board, which is comprised of people who are appointed by your county commissioners, where they have a policy, you can't make payments. So when we had Hurricane Michael and folks found themselves 2 months later with a bill, $1,200, the city says payable upon receipt. You know you can't make payments. I'm not going to take $600 now and $300 in 2 weeks and the rest of it at the end of the month. You pay it all now or we will turn off your bill. That's how you bring people into the fold. That's how you get people not only excited or not necessarily excited, but wanting to be involved in an election, but a local election.
And I would say and agree with with not only that, but Dr. Carter also mentioned it in the beginning when you talk about what is happening in the state legislatures, because a lot of times some of these issues just make your eyes glaze over and your brain turn to mush, but I think a lot of people are going to have to put a little milk, a little cinnamon, a little vanilla on that mush, stir it up, and make that information and the issues that are coming out of your state legislature be some delicious oatmeal so that you can consume it and figure out what's going on. And I think that once you, once that kind of attitude about what's happening in state legislatures becomes viral information, then it could very well affect change. So when you get here on Saturday, I mean, it is a Saturday, certainly. Any plans on going up to Capitol Hill at all? And let me warn you, the last group that did go to Capitol Hill, they got a lot of attention. So if you decide to go, speak loudly, but be polite.
Look, you just put all my thoughts in my mind right now.
It's still a family show, so watch your language with that one.
We do not have plans to go to the Capitol as of right now, but Friday night we do want to have a vigil on the steps of the Supreme Court to acknowledge the Shelby v. Holder. I was going to say something else, but to acknowledge that moment in time when the Voting Rights Act was gutted, that put us in the position where we are now. But again, I remind people, Georgia, we did what we did in Georgia during this time of without the protection from the preclearance protection that Dr. Carter talked about earlier. So it still can be done. So right now, no, we only plan to go to the Capitol because, that don't always work out for people who look like us. Now, if you look like other folks, you could scale the wall and break in and steal laptops and do all kind of craziness. And, a couple months later, they'll say, it was a normal day. Apparently, it's a normal day for white folks, but that ain't my reality as a black person in America. So we ain't trying to go over there. But where we will be is by that reflecting pool on 3rd between Madison and Jefferson, I believe it is, with, again, food, the music. My bosses will be preaching from the Book of Georgia again. We will have lots of speakers there. The food trucks are free. We pay for all the food, so come on out. We've got Big Tony and Trouble Funk, and we got to have some go-go. Now, look, we know better than to come to D.C. and not have some go-go. That would just be crazy. That's how we do our work. We lean into the culture. We blackity-black 365 over here. We love being black. Love everything about being black. And so that's what we're going to bring, a little bit of that Southern hospitality mixed with some of that go-go feel. And, yeah, we're going to talk and educate our folks and talk about this D.C. statehood. Mm-hmm.
Dr. Carter, this kind of energy in this conversation is exactly what the voters need, but also those people who are on the fringes or on the fence of voting, not voting, paying attention, not paying attention. But beyond the energy and after Saturday, what is the thing that most concerns you about the future of the Black vote, particularly between now and the midterm elections?
Well, I think my big concern is that people will view, you know, a victory like in Georgia and be like, well, the work is done, right? We don't want people to take that message away. What people need to know is we've come a long way, but we have longer still to go. And there are still folks out here actively trying to take your rights away. So my big fear is that people will become dissuaded. The reason that these voter suppression tactics are so useful is because they do go after marginal voters. They do go after those people who feel the least like their vote, their voice matters. And so they're really subtle in their effects. And we don't want these things to scare people away from taking advantage of what is their right, what belongs to them. And I don't want people to feel like they have no ownership, or that because they don't win that one time, or because the election doesn't go the way they want, that they can do nothing. I also don't want people to take their eye off, you know, sort of the ball. Wanda talked about this, and I am still beating this drum. Local elections matter, especially state legislatures. So if something is happening in your state, in your city, please pay attention to that as well as what's happening, federally.
Your biggest concern beyond the end of this cross-country tour, Wanda?
Yeah, no. I mean, I don't want to sugarcoat the wins that we had in Georgia. That was a lot of hard work from a lot of folks, a lot of communities, a lot of organizations. You know, we went deep and we worked hard. We started, you know, pretty much right after the runoff election. You know, my team on the ground, before I was the national field director, I was the senior state coordinator in Georgia. And shortly after the runoff election, we pivoted to do phone banking. And I'll tell you that the phone banking that we did into 30 or 50 or so counties, not once did we talk about registering to vote, voting, or an election. It was just to have a dialogue, to hear what people said was important, what would move them, what worries them, what keeps them up at night, what they want to see change in their community. And then we took the top three answers for each of those counties. We put it on a door hanger because we knew during the pandemic we didn't want to have too many conversations with folks at the doors, but we needed to get information out to them. So we made door hangers for each of those counties. And we reminded them, hey, we called you back over the summer. We talked to thousands of Black people across Georgia. And in Doherty County, in Lowndes County, in Calhoun County, in Clay County, you said these were the three things that were most important to you. Well, guess what? All three of these things are on the ballot, and we need you to come back out and vote. And so we can't get comfortable. We don't want to sugarcoat that it was hard work. But I really, truly believe, especially in Georgia, and I've seen it in Texas, I saw a little bit of it in Mississippi and a couple of other states, people are fired up. They see that these state legislatures are doing this because they know they are about to lose. And that fires people up. You know, when we were just a couple of weeks past the general election and we started looking at numbers for absentee ballot applications, we had something around, but at the beginning of mid-December, we had something around 200,000 requests for absentee ballots from people who did not vote in the general election. Think about that for a minute. Think about that. People, once you start winning gets contagious. People want to be on a winning team. And you know, we got plenty of room on the bandwagon. So come on, y'all, get in the game with us. We still in this fight. We still fighting hard. But we got power. I'm going to say it again from the book of Georgia. We got power.
Do you believe, Dr. Carter, that because we are seeing these suppressive new laws, that as a voter who does not support either the party that is behind the suppressive new laws or the laws themselves, obviously, if you believe that someone is trying to disenfranchise you, do you change the way that you cast your ballot? I'm not talking about who you vote for, but I'm talking about how to make sure that your vote counts, that it is counted, that if they take a pandemic voting box out of your neighbor, that you do have to get up extra early if it means that early voting is going to be only available, you know, in your neighborhood from 4 a.m. to 6 a.m. or something like that. I'm exaggerating here. But do you have to really change your mindset about your one vote?
You do. I mean, I think, you know, part of it is that we know that on the margins, maybe, you know, our votes don't matter in the same way. It's like, oh, my one vote is going to tilt the election. But we do know that there are places where it absolutely does matter. And so, yes, people have to know that this election cycle is going to be uncomfortable for us. That's the point. That means longer wait times. That means if you live in a place like Harris County, Texas, where you can vote anywhere in the county, you might have to drive 15 minutes further away from your usual polling place because they're making it take longer for us to cast ballots. That does mean that you might have to do something like, you know what, the early voting window is very short. I'm going to go on the first day of early voting. And, yes, I need to be prepared with a snack and some water because it's going to be a long haul. So, yes, we're going to have to change our minds. It should be easy for us to cast ballots. But what is the fact that these states, whether it's Arkansas, Montana, Indiana, Kentucky, Georgia, Florida, Louisiana, Alabama, they're trying to make it much more uncomfortable for us. And so, yes, we have to be prepared to be there for the long haul.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, if you don't like voter ID laws, but they become the law, then get your driver's license or your age of majority card or whatever is required to do it. You may spend that time working to change the law, but while you're working to change the law, make sure that you are in compliance so that you can vote for someone who will support your desire to change the law, Wanda.
And check your registration often. I'm sorry.
Yeah, absolutely. Wanda, I'll give you 20 seconds. Final word from you.
We got power. We showed it. We showed the pathway to success, how to get it done, how to do the deep organizing, how to reach out to our people, have a dialogue, listen, and then motivate our folks to get to the polls. It's there. The blueprint is there. The playbook is there. Anybody needs a copy of it, tell them to call me. I'm happy to share it.
There you go. Dr. Niambi Carter, Wanda Mosley, thank you both for talking to us. Be careful when you come into D.C., Wanda, but we will welcome you with open arms. We really appreciate your time.
Thank you. Yes, thank you.
Thank you.
That is the Daily Drum for this Thursday, June 24th. I'm Harold Fisher. Now stay tuned for Unheard. Good night.